You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Monarch. This is The Butterfly Effect, from a spark to flame. Welcome to this episode of The Butterfly Effect. The Butterfly Effect is an idea that is commonly used in chaos theory. We are going to be discussing how a small change can make much bigger changes happen, and how one small incident can have a big impact on the future. A show about how a small change can have a much larger impact. On today's episode of The Butterfly Effect, we are going to be discussing the power of Black audiences and the limitations Black audiences face when trying to use Hollywood media. My very first semester of college, I took my very first communications course, and it was extremely eye-opening. It allowed me to understand human behavior better and how it applies to everyday life when interacting with the media. However, it also made me question a lot of things I have seen in the media. 2020 has been a rough year, and I think we all can agree. Over quarantine, like many other Americans, I participated in binge-watching. I now have subscriptions to Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, HBO Max, and Disney Plus. One thing I have noticed on all these platforms, they have a section titled either Celebrating Black Stories or Black Stories or something along those lines. This is strange, I thought. These special sections are a new addition to these popular streaming networks. Proper Black representation in media has always been a challenge, and with all of the time now spent at home watching TV and social unrest in our country, it is even more important for writers, producers, and actors to properly portray Black people and the Black community. So let's start off by understanding a little bit about one of the most important theories in mass communications. That theory would be the uses and gratifications theory. In 1969, researchers Jay Blummer and Dennis McQuail wrote a book titled Television and Politics, Its Uses and Influences. In that book, the author studied the reasons various people had for watching political news during the 1964 election. Okay, let's remember, TV was a new media back in 1964, unlike how we watch television every day now. Dennis McQuail and Jay Blummer, these researchers, took their findings and joined the two other scholars to write an article titled Uses and Gratifications Research. That book and article laid the groundwork for a mass comm theory known as the Uses and Gratifications Theory. This was a really important change in how we think about the media. Instead of just thinking about the media and what it does to people, the theory asked, how do people use the media? And why do we seek out particular shows, topics, or forms of media? Why do you make the choices that you make every day when you either turn on the television, open your phone, or consume the media in any other way? By understanding why people make their media choices and how they use what they learn in those media environments, it gives us a better understanding of the relationship between viewers and producers of our media. However, not all audiences face the same choices when it comes to choosing media, especially in Hollywood media. After the break, we are going to be discussing the way African Americans and African American communities are portrayed in Hollywood. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Marnock, from A Spark to Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch. On today's episode, we have been discussing the way African Americans choose and digest media. We will now be discussing the way African Americans and African American communities are portrayed in the media. To give you all some more history and background on the topic, I'm going to start by explaining the 1960s and 1970s to you all. In the 1960s and the 1970s, just as Blummer and McQuayle were developing their theory of uses and gratification, Hollywood began making a lot of movies with black characters, but they were almost all of the same type, a type that is known as blaxploitation. I'm going to say that again because that is a difficult word, especially if you've never heard of it before. Blaxploitation. One of the most famous blaxploitation movies from this time is Shaft. Shaft and other blaxploitation movies represent progress in some ways. Black people now played lead roles. They were not forced to play only demeaning roles. But these movies were all similar and pandered to many racial stereotypes about black people and black life. Yes, black people had roles rather than playing either slaves or maids or demeaning roles like that, but it didn't properly demonstrate the complex lives of African Americans in their communities. So just think about that. If you are a black person living in 1973, when mass communication writers are saying, audience make their own choices. Well, what choices do you really have as a black person? Okay, you can either watch movies with an all-white cast. You can watch a movie where black people are portrayed as stupid or as servants. And if you want to see a movie that, you know, represents you, these are the only kinds, blaxploitation movies. You have not a lot of choices to choose from. I mean, not to sound dramatic. Okay, well, when someone starts a sentence off with not to sound dramatic, you know what is going to be said after is going to be dramatic. However, it does not make what I'm about to say any less important. There was not even a black Disney princess until 2009. When Disney created the movie, The Princess and the Frog, featuring Princess Tiana, an African-American girl from New Orleans, Louisiana, working hard to fulfill her dreams of having her own restaurant. Yes, thank you, Disney, for finally representing. However, Princess Tiana spent over half of the movie as a slimy covered frog. But hey, we will take it. We can take what we can get. When the movie came out, my parents rushed my overly giddy self to the movie theater, and I was surrounded by other girls and their families eager to see what Disney had finally put together for us. And yes, I am also guilty of when I went to Disney, I did buy the entire Princess Tiana princess set, the dress, the shoes, and the princess tiara. And yes, I did prance around Disney in the magical park all day in the outfit, insisting everyone call me princess. But it honestly feels like it took forever for Disney to finally create a black princess. Hundreds and probably even thousands of black girls grew up without a Disney princess that looked like them or represented that form of beauty. This can be especially harmful for children. It is important to have someone you feel that represents you in TVs, movies, and all their forms of media, since they all play a vital role in how we see ourselves and we see the world. I know personally for me as a child, I had to consistently seek out movies, cartoons, toys, dolls that I thought properly represented me or even somewhat looked like me, which was difficult and somewhat discouraging because I felt like maybe there was a reason these things were not being marketed or there was something wrong with me or my community. People either seem to be unaware or refuse to acknowledge their implicit bias, especially when it comes to consuming media. For those who may not know what implicit bias is, it is in social identity theory. An implicit bias or implicit stereotype is the pre-reflective attribution of particular qualities by an individual to a member of some social outgroup. Another issue I realized during my many days of binge watching were the issues with cop, police, or law enforcement shows. Our country is currently in a time of social unrest with the changes of our presidential administration, the Black Lives Matter movement, the protests at the Capitol, and many other social issues. Though over the years, police and crime shows have talked about new topics and these kinds of issues and become a bit less controversial, they still are pushing this narrative of cops and law enforcement are good. I will admit, I am a big fan of Criminal Minds, and I have seen basically every episode in every season. And I have watched plenty of Law & Order and Law & Order SVU in my days. But I think I was unaware of the harm that these types of shows may be causing. I am not saying that police or any member of law enforcement is inherently bad. But these kinds of shows consistently show Black and brown people as criminals. They may be pushing the wrong idea. They consistently misrepresent people for ratings, and they do not properly represent the people or their communities. These types of shows create a strange internal struggle of who really is the bad guy here? Who should I be rooting for? Well, for example, the Hollywood blockbuster movie Crash, which is a drama crime movie which was premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in 2004. The movie was supposed to illuminate America's ongoing racial angst by telling multiple stories. The movie stars several largely known famous Black actors, such as Don Cheadle, Terrence Howard, and Thady Newton. However, the movie didn't really do this. A key part of the movie is when white Los Angeles Police Department officer John Ryan, who's played by Matt Dillon, saves an African-American woman played by Thady Newton from a burning vehicle. Yes, but Los Angeles Police Department officer John Ryan and the woman played by Thady Newton are not strangers in this scene. You see, they have met before. They met when LAPD officer John Ryan demanded that she and her husband get out of their car during a traffic stop. When she did not immediately comply with Officer John Ryan's demands, he sexually assaults her by disguising his sexual assault as a standard pat-down. This is a violation of a Black body to simply assert his power as a white officer. This scene in the movie is difficult to watch. It evokes a gut-wrenching emotion. But then, later in the movie, the officer saves his victim from certain death in the car crash. It seems to have the effect of wiping the slate clean of all racial and sexual wrongdoing. This is simply unacceptable. In 2005, the movie Crash went on to win the Academy Award for Best Picture. As a culture, we created, consumed, and applauded this cultural product of violating Black bodies. Since then, we have come a long way. In 2021, you can now watch a family comedy like Black-ish, or you can watch Queen Sugar to follow the stories of a Black family in Louisiana. These choices represent important progress in our media. However, we still have a very long way to go. It is abundantly clear that Black audiences want to see authentic, diverse representations of themselves and of their communities. They want to know that the creators of the content they are watching are reflective of their communities and stories they tell, and they also want to see an end to the false depictions and misrepresentations that have historically promoted harmful stereotypes like the mammy of Black people. They want to support Black filmmakers and storytellers and see this support translated in cultural moments like Black Panther. Black Panther. Let us discuss the cinematic masterpiece of Black Panther. The movie is phenomenal, and yes, I did line up outside to see the movie with my friends and family, and we did see it in IMAX 3D. Yes, we are that extra, I will admit. However, the antagonist of the movie, Killmonger's goal is to share Wakanda's wealth and resources with oppressed Black people in America. He is portrayed as this radical man, and his actions are shocking and frowned upon. He is ultimately defeated at the end of the film, and I do not know if it was Marvel's intention to pit the Wakandians and Black people of America against each other, but it's ultimately what they do. I think it's important to acknowledge that these two groups are not at war with each other. The movie just creates this false narrative of Black people who refuse to be oppressed are radicals who must be stopped. It is extremely important to note that Black communities are not monolithic communities, and we need to see more authentic depictions of them. We need to see more of the representation of various and diverse characters rather than the funny Black best friend who has a few lines every episode. The challenge is that too often Hollywood as an industry has benefited and relied on the dehumanizing stereotypes of Black people to further reinforce the systematic abuse and attacks the Black community faces on a day-to-day basis. We see this from the time of the birth of our nation to the crime shows that I previously discussed in the show. Black audiences are diverse, and we should celebrate and embrace the various interests and subjects and genres and the diverse background of all Black audiences. We want a product, and we want to produce and watch these different aspects of Black life coming together. We should also embrace and always see the role as audiences and active critical users of the media and what we choose to watch and why we choose to watch it, and is it an actual representation of people and Black life? We create this kind of literacy through our own understanding of stereotypes and our lived realities and experiences. But we should enjoy and watch and lift up the films and stories that we think are good. We should support it. But we should also be critical and push beyond the surface. Why are certain Black women and men depicted in some ways? Why are historical tropes and ideas continue to be passed down from generation to generation? These stereotypes are part of the effort to disempower and rob Black people of their humanity and agency. But when it comes to Hollywood, there are still some real problems that Black audiences face when having a choice. In October 2017, Color Change, the nation's largest online racial justice organization, released a report that had commissioned from researchers at University of California, Los Angeles. That report, Race in the Writer's Room, How Hollywood Whitewashes the Stories That Shape America, detailed how much work Hollywood still needs to do to ensure the Black stories reflect the whole range of Black life and experiences. Quote, decision makers at each level bring assumptions about what is happening or not happening in the world. What audiences will or won't respond to? Who has the talent to make their shows succeed and who doesn't? And what is an acceptable or unacceptable story? That's natural. But what is intolerable is not having any checks in place when their assumptions are wrong. What is skewed about the Hollywood system is the degree to which those decision makers can exclude information they don't want to hear and people they don't want to listen to and avoid consequences for how their decisions affect people. Isolated writers' rooms composed of a white showrunner and a single tokenized black writer were described as particularly alienating. Discussions of race in the writers' room, if any, were described as awkward, which typically meant black writers had to struggle to find their voice. These racial dynamics usually resulted in black characters that were described as cardboard or stereotypical, and storylines about race that were described as superficial. Some statistics from this report were more than 90% of all shows examined were led by white showrunners, with 97% of shows with white creators being led by white showrunners. 80% were led by men. Some of these shocking statistics from the Race in the Writer's Room report revealed 2/3 of all TV shows have no black writers at all. 2/3 of all TV shows have no black writers at all. Another 17% of shows had just one black writer. Fewer than 10% of shows across 18 networks are led by showrunners of color, and 4.8% are black. The report makes it very clear that even though there are more characters and stories about black people, there are almost no black writers or showrunners creating these stories. So how do they make sure these stories are authentic and true? Well, the simple answer is they don't. Writers and producers may not know the harm they are doing by the small act of misrepresentation. They have catastrophic effects by shaping the way people see African Americans and the African American community. After the break, we are going to be continuing the discussion on the way African Americans and African American communities are portrayed in the media. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Monarch, from A Spark to Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I'm your host, DJ Monarch. On today's episode, we have been discussing the way African Americans choose and digest media. Okay, so today we have been discussing some pretty heavy topics. We've discussed discrimination in the writer's room, the misrepresentation and harmful stereotypes of black people and their communities, and I've likely ruined either one of your favorite movies or TV shows. But luckily, I have a very special guest with me today, a usual binge-watching partner of mine, Miss Brianna Winston, author of the paper Identifying Black Women in Print Media and Wellness Guide. Thank you for being here today, Brianna.
Thank you for having me here, DJ Monarch.
So to start off, can you tell us a little bit about your paper, Identifying Black Women in Print Media?
Yes, so I am an alumni of Winston-Salem State University, the illustrious Winston-Salem State University. I graduated with the class of 2016. I started my paper 2013, under Dr. Patterson Musaka's leadership research fellowship program. This was a very, very comprehensive presentation and research paper for a freshman to try to conquer. But I took on the task. My professor and mentor asked me to. So we began with, let me tell you why I chose this subject as my paper. So growing up, my mom was a cosmetologist and beautician, and she had her own beauty parlor, and we would have all the subscriptions to all the magazines. Cosmopolitan, Ebony, Essence, Sweet 16, I mean, every magazine you can think of. And so what most of my time spent in the salon was me going through the magazines, killing time, just reading, looking at ads, comparing myself to the ads, and just really searching for an image that represents me. So in the Cosmopolitan, the Vanity Fair, GQ, just off the top of my head, I remember constantly always wondering, where are the women that look like me? And when there was a woman that I could identify with, she still did not fit the realistic body frame of a Black woman. She was always more thin, more lengthy, lanky, of course, hair down to her mid-back. And it was just a real disconnect to look through print magazines and not see myself being represented. So when I got to college and I got this opportunity to choose any subject in to do my research on, I decided to take a stab at Black women representation in print media. So through this, we went back through a bunch of print media files all the way from 2008 all the way to 2011. And so I had to go through each volume from each month and flip through all the magazines and archives of the ads. Out of all those magazines, I did maybe four different magazines comparing them to Ebony and Essence. And even in the Ebony and Essence magazines, there still was very limited representation of what a true Black woman looked to me. And through my research, and it was basically a quantitative literacy research that I did, a quantitative analysis that I did, I found that it was one out of six ads in every magazine, there was one Black woman in the magazine. So out of one in six magazines, there was only one Black woman that represented other Black women in these magazines, mostly the Vanity Fair, the Cosmopolitan, the GQ, even the Home and Life magazines. There was really no representation. And so when we were represented in the magazine, I took note that it was the three stereotypical images in media. The Jezebel, who is the over-sexualized, hyper-sexualized representation of a Black woman. Think of very, very done up, very pin-up style, what's a good word to use? Just very sensual presenting woman. Is a huge stereotype. Then the Sapphire, the Black woman who represents the attitude, the angry Black woman, the gotta have it my way or no way, I don't need a man, independent. That was one of the representations. Or the Mammy, which was the one thing in the magazines that was always constant, was the Mammy visual always being represented into the magazines and print media, because it was always like the Lysol woman, or it was always a Madea and different mammy stereotypical characters, and they were all very, very, very stereotypical. But through the research, I found that we are very underrepresented in print media. And that even in our own magazines made for us, by us, there was still not a realistic idea of who we were and how we should be represented in the magazine. So that was the gist of my paper.
Wow, your findings were absolutely extraordinary. And I think it's kind of disheartening to hear that even in magazines created by us, for us, we weren't even properly, you know, represented. I think that's kind of ridiculous. And there is a lot of work that needs to be done. What would you say was the most interesting thing you found in your research?
So it was a special edition for Black men in the GQ magazine. Not quote me, but I believe it was a 2010 November issue, where they interviewed a bunch of different Black males about what woman they look for, or what they look for in a woman. And all of the attributes and all of the characteristics of the women that they were describing were attributes of white women. And so even in the print media, there was still no representation of black love or Black women being represented in this majority white print magazine. And then when we did have representation from the black perspective, from a black male, it still was very misrepresenting black women. It was disheartening, but it was honestly a reality check for myself, because at that point I had to accept that the society and the reality of the way that things were, because I won't speak of what it is today, but things in that moment for me were really set in stone of the reality that no matter what a black woman does, or no matter how hard she tries to compete with a white woman, she's still seen as less than or not as superior as the white woman, even when it comes to our own men. So that was probably the most shocking and interesting thing I learned.
No, that's definitely extremely interesting. And like you were saying, extremely disheartening, because you just feel like there's not really a place for you. So earlier in the show, I admitted some of my guilty pleasure binge watching shows that don't necessarily portray black people in their communities properly. For example, I talked about like cop and police, law enforcement shows, SVU, Criminal Minds, and how they're good, but they push a narrative of law enforcement being the good and righteous. What would you say is your guilty pleasure binge watching show, and how do you wish it portrayed black communities better?
So for me, my absolute guilty pleasure reality TV show is Housewives of Atlanta. And I, guilty as it may be, I hate how we are represented on the show, because it's always drama, gossip, lies, deceit, deception. I mean, just a load of things that we are not made of. I mean, it's not, is in the fallacies and lies that they portray on the show, it really, really exaggerates what it is to be a black woman in Atlanta. So I would say that is most definitely the show that I think misrepresents what my idea of black women are, and also portrays a bad vision of what black women can be.
I agree. I think everyone loves a little dirty, trashy reality TV every once in a while, for sure. Thank you so much for being with us today, Miss Brianna Winston.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
After the break, we are going to be continuing the discussion of the way African Americans and African American communities are portrayed. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Marnark, from A Spark to a Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch, and on today's episode, we have been discussing the way African Americans choose and digest media. I just want to take a moment to thank Ms. Brianna Winston for being here today and telling us more about the way African Americans are portrayed, not just in TV and movies and that form of media, but also in print media. She brought some really interesting points about how it was discouraging for her to look, even as a little girl, to now, the way African American women are portrayed, and then the three ways they are consistently portrayed. It gives you the feeling of them being very two-dimensional characters and not deep, meaningful people. And I think it's really important for writers of TV shows and even in print media to start portraying African Americans in a more positive, less stereotypical light. I think it is also important for the media to discuss these difficult topics African Americans and the African American community are forced to deal with on a day-to-day basis. The Black Lives Matter movement is a very relevant thing that is currently going on in our country and directly affects the African American community. It is important to touch on subjects that are difficult, but also just slightly uncomfortable. We can't completely ignore these things that are relevant, active parts of our community. It is important to have Black characters with depth and meaning featured in shows. Black people have unique and interesting stories that deserve to be told. Black writers should also be consulted when writing these types of stories to try to prevent harmful stereotypes or misrepresentation. Black filmmakers and producers should be promoted and celebrated when tackling difficult stories and topics. And you, yes, you, the consumer of media. As the consumer of media, you should be able to get an authentic, non-stereotypical, misrepresenting story. Yes, we have talked about some guilty pleasure binges that may not portray African Americans in the best light. And I am not telling you to never watch TV, movies, or read a magazine again. I am not trying to shame you. However, I am trying to make you aware and make you a critical consumer of media. Stop and think for a moment. You do have choices. Be aware of your implicit bias and do your due diligence. I know that it may sound dramatic and that you may think that media does not play that big of a role in how we see things in our everyday lives. But you're wrong. Media has a big effect on our day-to-day life, and we consume it in all different ways, whether it's through television, movies, magazines, anything. Media shapes how we view certain aspects of the world. One semi-small misrepresentation may develop a new way of thinking or a way you view certain individuals and certain individuals in a community. One spark leads to a flame. As a member of the African American community, I have a unique story, and my story is different than others that may look like me. I'm a black girl with a white boy name. People can't reconcile my brown face and blonde braids with my proper grammar punctuated by a southern y'all. None of this feels weird to me, but it gives other people an identity crisis. Others tend to compare me to my parents who have led civil rights organizations, run for public office, and been extremely outspoken on race and gender. They expect me to think, act, and believe exactly like them. But I am my own person. I have my own unique views. I know racism when I see it, but I don't see it everywhere. I'm black in my own way. I am unique. My grandparents grew up in the Jim Crow South with laws defining what blackness meant for them. I honor their struggles for freedom by refusing to let anyone or anything define what blackness must mean for me. I don't always want to have to watch people that don't look like me, or I don't want to watch people that look like me being portrayed as stupid or inferior or be the punchline of every joke. I want to see meaningful stories and proper representation in all forms of media. We have come a long way since 1970, I'll admit that. And yes, black audiences have more choices than just blaxploitation films. However, there's still work that needs to be done, especially by Hollywood. Everyone has a role to play and can exert a degree of power. Continue to be aware of your implicit bias. Reflect on what kinds of media you choose to consume. And sometimes you have to ask those uncomfortable, critical questions. Keep an open mind and continue to learn. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Butterfly Effect. You have been listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Monarch. This is The Butterfly Effect, From a Spark to Flame. Please join us for next week's episode of The Butterfly Effect.